So we are about to get into the concluding lectures. So I've invited two speakers to give complementary approaches. One is Bernard Gilly, and he will describe where startup and investors can help in translating discoveries into cures, and possibly when we would be able to work together, really, between public and private sectors for a successful endeavor. Probably I should also have asked foundations to speak about that, but you may have heard throughout all the talks how important they are in helping us at the initiation of the projects and also to keep the voice of patients. And the last speaker before John and I conclude will be Paul Sieving. You heard him this morning. He's also, and most important, the head of the National Eye Institute, who has been on almost every slide during all the talks, and explaining why he's trying to break the new barriers with the audacious goals. So thank Bernard. We have been working together for the past almost 15 years, and he will describe a concept.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the title of the talk, Jose. I think that you should have formulated this differently by just asking, what are you guys doing there in this small, funny company, except, I don't know, taking vacations or having fun? And in fact, I must say that we have fun in those companies, and that's really thanks to the scientific foundation of the work that we are developing. Maybe just to start with, and obviously we're changing gears. I'm not going to talk much about deep science here, but just for you to know, the research and development in the life science industry is in fact happening in a context of a very, very intense competition. And also, it's really a characteristic of it. It requires major investment, dollar, euros, investments, millions. And this context today is characterized also as, you, and amongst other, by many things, but certainly the emergence of new chronic diseases, essentially with aging. And it is also a sector that is profoundly marked by the pressure towards efficiency and efficacy of the new treatments within the highest safety level. And obviously, and all the pharmacologists that were before me knows that when a product is active, it would bear some toxicity as well. And that's an increasing pressure for us and an increasing cost to translate the discovery into an innovation that we will be able to bring to the patients in as fast as we can. Because also, and we sense this today with the development of the social networks and all the like, that the social pressure about accessing new treatment is clearly increasing. However, the last 15 years, and you all know this, have witnessed an unprecedented acceleration of scientific discoveries and technological innovations. And clearly, that's especially true in areas that have been a little bit left aside, like neuroscience, and in neuroscience, I'm including the ophthalmology field. And once I met Joseph for the first time, there was not much in the ophthalmology area, and now there's a lot. And this acceleration of the scientific results, I've not really been shared really with the people or organism that could traditionally fund this, the development of those results, and namely, has not been really followed or shared by the large industry, whether it's a pharmaceutical industry or the medtech industry. And in Europe, has not been really shared as well by the institutional funds like the VC industry, the venture capitalist industry. And so that has bring the system in Europe to a state where it has been really more difficult than it is in the US to develop new innovation, although difficult doesn't mean that it's not impossible. And clearly, without complaining about the European situation, but clearly innovation in life science is in fact a process of connected and interactive steps. I'm sorry for the slide is not a good one, but I'm not born with the web, so I had difficulty to find out the right picture to describe this. But in any case, it always starts with basic research. a basic research is not made for anything else than advancing the knowledge. It is not made to have an immediate intent yielding to a product. But however, and that's really very true, and even more true here in the Collège de France, that without a strong and performing academic research, there would be no startup, right? And none of the parties would exist absent of the other. So that is the idea of the rope. I mean, we're on both sides of the rope, but you know that the first physical principle is that you cannot push a rope. There's no effect on the other side. And so you cannot expect the academic research to push the scientific results towards becoming products. And on the other end, there's no point for us to pull anything if there's not something on the other end, right? So we are bound to really work together. And that's even more important because, in fact, it is also, and we'll see this later, it is also an iterative process, okay? We are very often developing technology from scientific results that, in fact, happens to be a dead end when we're getting into animal model. That's fine because we're not spending much money with the rodent model. When we get to larger animals, that's a little bit more money. When we get to primates, that's now we're talking maybe around millions. And obviously, when we're getting into man, I mean that's an extremely high cost. So we have to run through this iterative process again and again until we get a molecule or a therapeutic approach or a medical device that is really well fitted to move into human. And we have to do this before. And this journey through innovation always, always starts with investment. Whether it comes from public or private origin doesn't matter much, but it really starts with an investment. So as you can see here, I mean, it starts with an investment, certainly mostly public investment into basic or applied research, and then gradually we'll move to more private investment and more money involved into the system. And in fact, the startups are here to fill the gaps between the academic labs and the commercialization of the product. And yes, indeed, the scientific knowledge is important, and it all boils down from the scientific knowledge. And let me just take two examples here. You would agree with me that there's nothing more fundamental than the search for the Higgs boson, right? And you're going to ask, what does the Higgs boson do here? In fact, the physicists, when they were looking for the Higgs bosons, have developed a whole bunch of systems to break the atoms into the smallest pieces. But at the end of the day, they recognized that they wanted to have a picture of the small guy, an image, a photography of the small guys. And then they came with the question, how do they take a picture of something which is extremely rare and which is lasting, if I remember well my quantum physics, about 10 to the minus 12 seconds. And this is something that they can't get with a regular camera system. And one of them, another physicist, came to think that if they get a sensor where all the pixels will be independent from its neighbors and will in fact be smart enough to only capture the event or an event, any type of event, that happens in its optical axis, that could make the job. And by doing this, the guy was in fact describing more or less the retinal system, the way our photoreceptors are working. And guess what? This was the technology that gave birth to the work that we've been doing with Jose, that Jose has been doing with his team at the Vision Institute and as well as others for developing the first artificial retina that we, together with Jose, are now doing with GeneSight with the optogenetic approach. And with this, we have developed even another company that is developing this sensor into many other areas. Again, an example of good basic academic science. No goals of developing any product, but very useful for indeed getting this product. There's another example which comes from here, the Collège de France. There's this work done by Alain Prochain and his team on the morphogenesis of the brain. And they got identified a few years ago this funny signaling factor, intercellular signaling factor, that is involved in the early development. And now move this into understanding that it is also it has also a role in the alteration of the nerves of the neurons. And from this, we have now developed a brand new approach towards treating neurodegeneration with another company. So again, I mean, basic research has been really, really awfully important to do this. And these startups that we are all developing are indeed there to fill this gap. And in order to move from the bench to the clinical applications and to be able to, as soon as possible, bring a product that could be potentially a therapeutic approach to the clinician and the patients, we need to mobilize a number of expertise, and certainly much more than the scientific expertise. And this expertise goes from the pharmacology to quality assurance, the clinical development expertise, the regulatory affairs, the toxicology people, the development, the manufacturing, the development of manufacturing processes, and so on and so on, until we get all the experts and the manpower to move this from the lab to an innovative therapeutic approach. And these steps are all the more difficult as at the very beginning it also needs to translate the goals and quality standards from the academic world, which are completely different from those in the industrial world. And so, again, this process is a difficult process, but it's a process that needs someone to handle this. And this is clearly the role of our startups to really work on this translational research that really utilizes multidisciplinary collaboration to make the findings from basic research useful for practical applications. And again, this process is an iterative process, and this process is a process that requires an awful lot of money. And clearly, I'll not quote the amount of money that is needed in the pharmaceutical industry to develop a product, but even with our startup companies, we're talking in terms of tens of millions of dollars or euros to move this further. And remember, at the beginning, we are facing in Europe, and that's relatively true also so in the U.S. these days, a kind of a shortage of investment capacity, so that it's important that we find the ways to successfully linking together, associating the investment, the science, and the expertise in this development. And that's what we have been doing, and I'll certainly thank José on this, so I don't know why it's not really well. No. We have created this iBionex ecosystem where indeed we're doing this. We're really seeking good science, good scientific results all over the world, and particularly in France, as our hub is in France. And this is the first step. The second step is to create startups, gather the expertise, gather the money for the first 5 to 20 million, and we want to be able to invest ourselves 20 million on the 80 to 100 million that are necessary to develop the product, and then gets to providing the product to the patients with and the clinicians with a proven therapeutic approach. And this is, in fact, where the value of our companies lies, and this is where, in fact, we will be able to enter into this virtuous circle where we could reinvest the money from the first product into the system. Just very briefly, the hub is, in fact, the selection of these innovation and this science getting to disruptive innovation. We have done this since 2011. We have successfully created 7 companies until today with no failure, meaning we have not moved any product to the bins. We're continuing pushing this product forward. I'll not name all of them, but we've got Pixium, which is this artificial retina system, which we expect, the company expects to commercialize this very soon. GeneSight is a gene therapy approach for Leber optic neuropathy. You've heard of this earlier today, and also optogenetic approach. We are in phase 3 clinical trials. Gecko, Chronocam, which is another use of this Higgs boson discovery. Brainever, which is this company with the neurodegeneration approach, and so on and so forth. So clearly, we are doing this at our small level, based in Paris, gathering all this expertise together and moving this from the maturation into the growth phase. And the growth phase is really once we get the proof of concept and once we have the insurance that a molecule or a device is safe and is effective, then we're moving this into full-fledged clinical development to further prove into a number of patients that it is indeed efficient. And then we'll bring this to the regulatory people and seek for the marketing approval. Because again, because this is life science, because this is patient at the end of the chain, we are in a very highly regulated environment. And thanks, by the way, because I mean that avoid people doing things that would not be ethical. But at the end, we know that the product will benefit to the patient and that we will create value out of this. Thank you very much.